and we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
Hi, I'm Ann Northrup.
And we start with some tragic news. The LGBTQ movement was really stunned this week by the untimely death of the transgender pioneer Monica Roberts of Houston.
Terrible, totally unexpected. But not so unexpected are the hearings for Amy Coney Barrett for the Supreme Court. And she used offensive language when talking about LGBT people. One of the few times we should say that she even answered a question. We'll go into some depth on her.
Trump this week canceled a 500-person Pride in Federal Service summit that was to be taking place this month.
Yet another outrage from Education Secretary Betsy DeVos.
In better news, a record 574 out LGBTQ candidates are running for public office in this country this fall.
People do ask us for better news. We do what we can, but, you know, we're constrained by actual happenings in the world. But a voting guide from Catholic bishops says Biden is far better on most of their issues than Trump. I don't know where to put that on the news.
There was a big gay circuit party in Atlanta that flouted the pandemic distancing and mask rules.
The NFL came out for coming out in football on National Coming Out Day.
Saturday Night Live took on J.K. Rowling's transphobia.
Kind of. Russian police arrested the members of Pussy Riot that we showed you last week, flying rainbow flags on government buildings in Moscow.
And I'm going to give you my take on the Boys in the Band remake on Netflix.
Oh, boy. But I guess we start with Monica Roberts. So sad. Such a shock. This came out of nowhere.
It did. And there were conflicting reports about what felled her. I mean, she collapsed in a parking lot outside her building, and they thought she might have been hit by a car. But it turns out she had a blood clot. She had chest pains, a blood clot, and had not been feeling well lately. Now, who is Monica Roberts? I mean, the most prominent thing she did was the Transgrio blog that she started back in 2006. And she was a transgender activist, and she was outraged that all these stories were being written about transgender people who were dying, who were being deadnamed in the press, who were, being misgendered by. And she assiduously fought to. That's the reason that we talk about this on this show every week, because of Monica Roberts, because she got this information out. And, you know, she had a long history and a lot of trans groups. There's a big trans leader. People looked up to her. She was a lot of time with her at a journalist conference in Orlando. And we were put into groups for the week or for the weekend. And she was at my table. She is a formidable presence to be with. I will say that.
Oh, and a formidable mentor to so many. So many of the comments when her death was announced were from people who said how important she was to them as a helper, as a role model, as someone who talked to them whenever they had a question or needed help. Just a huge presence in the entire LGBTQ community, a mentor across the board, but certainly specifically to young trans people.
Yeah, she was a native of Houston. She said she knew she was different at five or six, and she transitioned in 1993-94, a founding member of the National Transgender Advocacy Coalition in 1999, and served as their lobby chair until 2002. And she was an activist in Louisville, serving on the board of the Fairness Campaign, which we talk about on the show quite a bit. But she began writing Transgrio, and Grio is a word for West African storytelling in 2004 as a newspaper column and then became a blog in 06.
We have a couple of minutes of video of her testifying on, what was it?
She was the lead opponent of something called SB6 in Texas.
Ah, yes.
Which was a bill to exclude transgender, gender nonconforming, and non-binary Texans from participation in public life, basically.
It was a bathroom bill, among other things. It said that people could not, had to use the bathrooms of their original birth gender. And so she testified quite eloquently. You'll see her here at the right-hand end of the table testifying. I wish we had a close-up of her. We've had a couple of pictures, I believe, we've shown. But you'll hear her testimony against the bathroom bill.
Start when you're ready.
Thank you for the opportunity, Senator and panel, to address this today. I represent a couple of organizations, Black Trans Women, Inc., which is based in Dallas, Texas, and the Trans United Fund. I also sit on Mayor Turner's LGBT Advisory Committee in my hometown of Houston. Like you, Senator Colcourts, I share something similar to you. I'm a fourth-generation Texan. But my ancestors came here in chains. And unfortunately, Texas has a long history of oppression against marginalized groups. And that history, sadly, as a Texan and a proud Texan, ashamed, it makes me ashamed in terms of seeing what the Texas Transgender Oppression Act is, what I call SB6. We had someone earlier in the day talk about unjust laws. And here's what Dr. King had to say, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. An unjust law is a code that a numerical or power majority compels a minority group to obey, but does not make binding upon itself. Would you, Senator Colcourts, do what you're trying to force me and other trans women to do in order to go to a men's bathroom? I think not. So in that way, SB6 meets the test of an unjust law. And one of the other things that has bothered me today is I'm one of the few people today as part of the group that we've talked about today in terms of Black trans women. Most of my sisters are not able to be here or can't be here because we are trying to get by in many cases on less than $10,000 a year. This bill will exacerbate the discrimination that we face in this state, and I oppose it tremendously.
Okay, thank you.
And she spoke at a rally at the Capitol in Austin. That was back in 2017 about this. We had a picture of that. I don't know if we put it up yet. Just really one of the great leaders of the movement of all time.
And the Trans United Fund, which she co-founded in recent years, is an organization to build capacity within the trans community to support political leadership that supports trans issues and just to increase the power of trans people.
So we're all very sad. And moving on, I have another death that I just learned about this week, something that really does relate to our history. Bernard Cohen died. He was the young ACLU lawyer in 1964 who took on the Loving v. Virginia case to overturn laws against interracial marriage, and those laws were struck down by the Supreme Court in 1967, when most people still oppose same-sex marriage, even in New York. And he asked Richard Loving when he went to the Supreme Court, Richard Loving didn't want to go, what he wanted the court to know. And Richard said, "Mr. Cohen, tell the court I love my wife. And it is just unfair that I can't live with her in Virginia." And that was it.
That's a good segue to Amy Coney Barrett and what the Supreme Court looks like now and will look like very shortly when she is confirmed, which, of course, we expect momentarily. The thing that caught our eye immediately this week in the hearings was her reference to sexual preference.
I have never discriminated based on sexual preference, she said. Not only is that, of course, an offensive phrase, it implies that this is a choice, although she tried to backtrack on that later when she was questioned about it. She even tried to equate it with discrimination based on race. But, I mean, the fact, it's also a lie, one of many she told in the hearings, that because we have reports from students at Notre Dame on the law school who say she has always gone to these right-wing groups and never met with us and never come to our groups. And besides that, she speaks to all these groups on campus that have virulently anti-gay speakers, famous ones. And of course, she herself takes fees from Alliance Defending Freedom, which is an anti-gay hate group that does legal stuff.
And is also associated with the Leonard Leo group that got her nominated.
Well, we should say this is part of a decades-long project by the right wing, and in the last 10 years, they've spent $250 million to install these people on the court. And Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island spent his half hour, when he could have been questioning her, laying out this horrendous vision of what's happened to the courts, not just the Supreme Court, all the lower courts, and they're in control now.
Look, they put Trump in the presidency to accomplish exactly this. The Notre Dame reference Andy made was to Caitlin Ringrose, who is the former president of the LGBT Law Forum, who wrote an essay talking about how Amy Coney Barrett was specifically not an ally of the LGBT students at Notre Dame Law School, wouldn't attend their events when all other professors would, and opposed the issues that they raised with the law school about inclusion, about just sanctioning their group and allowing it recognition within the law school.
Well, Notre Dame doesn't have a policy against discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity.
Exactly. And she would not help out there in spite of her now telling the committee that she never has discriminated on the basis of sexual preference and never would discriminate on the basis of sexual preference. So Mazie Hirono, senator from Hawaii, was just, I thought, fantastic in going after her on this, listing all the LGBTQ cases at the Supreme Court, which by implication she would have been on the other side of. We might never have gotten Romer v. Evans or Lawrence v. Texas or the Windsor case or the Obergefell case, any of them. They would all have gone down with Amy Coney Barrett on the court, and they may all disappear with Amy Coney Barrett on the court.
I love Senator Hirono. I thought she was one mistake I think she made was not stopping and saying, to which you say, you know, she didn't.
Because all she was going to say was, I haven't discriminated and I wouldn't. I find discrimination abhorrent, which is what she actually said. Cory Booker also went after her on this and said, you know, do you believe that sexual orientation is an immutable characteristic? And she sort of mumbled yes, but in a way that was not entirely believable. What I found interesting about this whole exercise, and believe me, I think it's a completely useless exercise other than to give the Democrats a platform to try to make their case that healthcare coverage is at risk, as well as reproductive rights and any number of things. But you know, these originalists, this whole argument for originalism is about we only look at the text, and if it's not in the text of the Constitution, you know, then it's for the legislature, it's not for us. But I found in her testimony and in most of these decisions that these people make, there is such hypocrisy because they are perfectly willing to extrapolate a principle from the Constitution when it fits their worldview. It is only when it is on the other side that suddenly they're drawing the line and saying, no. She went into a whole thing about we can decide about cell phone privacy, even though that's not mentioned in the Constitution, because we can extrapolate the founders' devotion to no unreasonable searches and seizures, because of course that would make sense in the modern day with modern communications. But if you try to tell them that you can talk about privacy rights or about equal protection as it applies now, they say, oh, no, it's not explicitly in the Constitution.
Well, look at the Second Amendment. I mean, it was, in the Heller decision, which Scalia wrote, they basically found an individual right to bear arms, even though the explicit language of the Second Amendment is, in order to form well-regulated militias by states, the right to the people of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed. So she went beyond that. In a case, found that there was a law that said if you've committed a felony, you can't get a gun. And she said, oh, no, it has to be a violent felony. Well, where's that in the Constitution?
Exactly. She also, by the way, served on the board of the Trinity School, a Catholic school from 2015 to 17, which did not allow any children of gay parents at the school.
I guess she doesn't think discrimination against gays is abhorrent. And of course, I'll just lay it out. Nobody's going to say this in a hearing because they're avoiding the question of religion. She belongs to an anti-gay organization.
Yes.
Church. I mean, if it was a church that said blacks can't be leaders, which the Mormon church did until 1970 something, Mitt Romney was so relieved. He said he cried when they found a new teaching from God that said, okay, you can let blacks in. Come on.
She has written about all these things. She has written anti-trans things. She has written anti-LGBTQ things. She has written anti-abortion things. But then she turns around at these hearings and claims that she has an open mind. And the problem is that she has such a placid demeanor at this hearing that everyone looks at her and say, surely when she gets on the court, she's too nice. She wouldn't do mean things. Well, there is a mean streak in this woman, and you could see as she got a little more tired or a little more fed up with the senators, the Democrats yelling at her, that she got a little tense and terse and angry, and I could see that there is a lot more there than she is letting on.
Our show, the only way to overcome this, after all this court packing by the Republicans, is to rebalance the courts. And if the Democrats won't do it for us when they get in, I know they don't want to, a lot of them don't want to talk about it now. Some do, like Warren and Merkley talk about it. And of course, the Republicans keep saying, they're going to do it. And I don't think the people would care if we expanded the courts. We haven't done that in the lower courts for 50 years.
You give people too much credit and you leave out the entire lying campaign by the Republicans.
They can do their lying campaign, but if we get power, we better do something with it.
And exactly.
Not just appeal to norms, because Republicans have broken every norm in the book.
But do we have the guts to do that? Well, now, I also would like her to be questioned and the Republicans to be questioned about the president being given Regeneron as a drug, which comes from fetal tissue, which they have argued against for years and have made the basis for their complaints about abortion. And this and other drugs he's been given come from fetal tissue cells.
Maybe it could be an exception like in the old days when Catholics couldn't eat meat on Friday, but they could if there was nothing else around and they were going to starve.
Hypocrisy. Well, situational ethics.
All right, let's move on to President Trump. He did an executive order that canceled all diversity trainings.
Unbelievable.
I read this thing. It is just a screed against diversity and updating any ideas about anything. So the group Pride in Federal Service was supposed to have a summit October 21st to 22nd. 500 people registered for it. It was canceled. The gay activist Hal Kuden, we know, was set to give a speech on COVID-19 to an agency based on his concepts in his book, Golden Men, The Power of Gay Midlife. We should have him on. I'd like to hear about this. How the challenges that we had coming out could help us in the COVID crisis. Interesting.
The only silver lining to this is that if we do take power, I would hope that the Democrats are keeping a list of things like this to cancel the minute they take power, and keeping a list of all these really horrible people that have been put into power. Oh, the other thing I want to mention about Amy Coney Barrett and being a liar is this director of national intelligence, Ratliff, who was confirmed on the grounds that I would never do anything political in that job. I will be absolutely above board. Total lies. The minute he got in the job, he started, you know, pogroms of progressives in the intelligence community, turning everything into a Republican political event in terms of intelligence, going after the Hillary Clinton emails, whatever. And they are just the worst liars. And so I want to make sure all these people disappear in a few months.
They are ruthless, and we need to be too. On October 13th, did this happen, this Trump pride rally with Lara Trump and Rick Grenell that they were saying they were going to do?
Luckily, that escaped my...
Nowhere on the invite were the words gay or LGBTQ. They made no general announcement about it, which is why Ann didn't know about it. And of course, they were usurping October 13th, which was National Herpes Awareness Day.
Okay. And Fauci, of course, is mad at Trump because they've usurped him by putting him in a Trump ad. He gave an interview where he said he was asked about, yep, you know, had he and his team done enough against COVID? And he said no one could have done more. He was actually referring to himself, not even the team, just I. No one could have done more. And they turned this into a Trump ad as if he were talking about Trump.
And so at least he did speak out about it. I want to take it down. Trump pushed right back and said, you said it. You said it. Well, I mean,
not in that context. I didn't say it. I wasn't talking about you.
I would like resignations at this point from the health people, especially since they're trying to impose herd immunity on all of us. I was happy to see William Hazeltine say that's another word for mass murder. That's what imposing herd immunity on a human.
Well, we'll get to more of that in Atlanta in a minute. But meanwhile, Betsy DeVos has appointed her 9,000th anti-LGBT official to the Education Department. Sarah Perry, who has been appointed head of the Diversity and Inclusion Council. I'm surprised that still exists, given...
she's from the Family Research Council.
Exactly. But shouldn't that have been wiped out by the Trump executive order?
She's very anti-transgender. How much damage can she do before January 20th? By the way, Josh Hawley, Senator of Missouri, introduced a letter openly in the hearing for Amy Coney Barrett. And we have a letter from the Family Research Council in support of her that we would like to introduce.
Well, my favorite moment was the introduction of a letter from about 90 Notre Dame professors saying, Amy, step back and withdraw your nomination until after the election.
Well, no, she needs to be there when the election is over to give it to Trump if she can. A good decision from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. They have ruled that the son of a gay binational couple born abroad by surrogacy is a U.S. citizen. This was a rebuke to the U.S. State Department. The ruling was unanimous. The suit was brought by Immigration Equality.
These were two gay men who are married, but one of them has not yet achieved U.S. citizenship. Don't ask me why. But they are the fathers of twins born to a surrogate in another country. when they went to get their children given U.S. citizenship as the sons of a married gay couple, they were told only one of them could be.
One from the sperm of the American, one from the sperm of the Israeli. I think he's Israeli.
Yes, even though they are married.
Yes.
So the court has seen the light.
Okay.
By the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of national politics and such, Thursday night at midnight is the last moment to register yourself in the census, because they have come down, the Supreme Court has said that's it, the end. Counting stops after Thursday. Today, as many of you are seeing it, I hope some of you won't be seeing it till
after. It takes 10 minutes. You go to my2020census.gov, my2020census.gov. Go there. The Supreme Court sided with Trump in this case, as they do on election issues, on these issues. The power of the president seems to be unlimited.
And that's even before Barrett joins the court.
Senator Whitehouse cited 80 5-4 decisions led by John Roberts against any kind of progressive anything. So they've been doing the damage already.
Which is why we do need the legislature, and why we need you to register with the census so that you can have more representation in Congress. Because if they don't know you're there, they're not going to give you a member of the House of Representatives. So
it's nice to see you all voting out there, early voting, maybe voting by mail, but early voting, waiting.
Hang in there.
For 11 hours, which is an outrage, which is a sign of voter suppression in Georgia, et cetera.
Even Brian Williams said so. That is the definition of voter suppression. Okay, Brian.
I'm not watching NBC anymore since they're giving Trump that forum opposite Biden.
Oh, God. All right. Well, let's move on. In fact, to more bad news. In Shreveport, Louisiana, another black trans woman murdered, 20 years old, Brooklyn DeShauna Smith, shot dead in, I guess, her apartment. That's where she was found. It was called an epidemic by the American Medical Association a couple of years ago, and it's only gotten worse.
Brooklyn DeShauna Smith was a studying cosmetology. She worked at a call center, and this was a homicide, 32nd one this year. All but one are black trans women.
Yeah.
All right. Where are we now? A little update on the story about Chris Cooper and Amy Cooper in the park. Our friend Chris Cooper, the bird watcher, you know, originally we thought, well, this woman, Amy, called the cops on him and said, he's threatening me. Apparently, this case has gone. The Manhattan DA has brought this case to court, and it has been revealed that she made a second call. We're not sure exactly when, saying he assaulted me. He assaulted me. A black man assaulted me. So they're still only talking about, you know, making a settlement and giving her community service. Her lawyer is saying this is political correctness gone wild. I mean, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, it wouldn't fit into Trump's diversity training, so I'm sure it would be canceled. But she had to go to court this week for a hearing on a proposed settlement. It's been postponed till a November next date, but the police officer who answered the call testified about talking to her and said she asked her about this second call and said, did he assault you? And Amy Cooper said, no, he did not.
I just made that up.
Yeah, because it made me feel bad.
Because I wanted him dead. Well, we haven't heard from Chris about his reaction to this. All right, let's talk about.
Charming story out of going back to Louisiana, Pearl River near New Orleans, not Pearl River, New York, where I play golf, but Pearl River, Louisiana. So, someone is going by a church. And it's late, and they see lights on, and they decided they'd check it out. Nosy people in Pearl River.
That's how they caught the Watergate burglars.
Yes, kind of. So they went and looked in the window, and there on the altar was a young priest having sex with two women who turned out to be
dominatrixes.
Professional dominatrixes.
Reverend Travis Clark.
He's been kicked out.
Well, I mean, come on. He's a traditionalist. They used to use temples all the time for sexual rituals.
Exactly. I think it's, and in Roman times, they were videotaping it. So they had the actual receipts, as they say. He has been prosecuted, or the women have been prosecuted for obscenity, clearly visible from the street. Now, it was all consensual. You may want to kick him out of the priesthood, but I don't know why they should be prosecuted.
This came up in my building because, you know, we live in a big complex and there are a lot of windows out there. And one woman called management and said, they're having sex over there and they're not drawing the blinds. And the management, which is pretty conservative here, said, there is no law against that. If you don't want to look at it, don't look at it.
Draw your blinds.
Exactly.
Well, the church's answer to this, aside from getting rid of the priest, was they took the altar out of the church and burned it. Evidently, it had been desecrated.
Listen, he was also the chaplain at Pope John Paul II Catholic School, and his predecessor in that post was under investigation for sexting with male students, asking when they would turn 18.
Maybe we should be asking Amy Coney Barrett about all of this. How can she
religious
be
freedom? Religious how, freedom.
How can she be such a devout Catholic when it is such a hotbed of perversity?
We don't like the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. They're very anti-gay. But they released a voting guide with about 50 issues on it about how the candidates line up on the issues that they are concerned about. Guess who won? Biden aligned with them on 38 issues, Trump on 11, and after the fetal tissue stuff, probably just 10. Yeah. Most Catholic bishops are very buddy-buddy with Trump, especially Dolan of New York. Biden would be the second Catholic president, but he shares most of their alleged values.
Well, now we have to ask him about those values.
Well, come on. It's things like peace and helping immigrants and feeding people and things like that. Healthcare.
Well, that would be good. Is he against the death penalty like they are?
I don't know.
I don't either. Well, I don't want to make a bad joke about this, but I will segue to Atlanta and talk about, herd immunity. Evidently, that's what gay men holding a circuit party inside a bar in Atlanta were doing. We have a picture there of what is this, the 1980s?
And one of them died of a drug overdose. But the real issue is COVID. Atlanta Pride, because they billed this as a Pride event, so they had nothing to do with that. All their events are virtual. The party was hosted by something called, I guess it's pronounced Gay Boy Events, GA Boy Events, who don't care if you
play on Georgia and gay.
Yeah, they don't care if you live or die, and they certainly don't care if the rest of us don't live or die, because, you know, these become super spreader events. And these are young people who are less likely to get sick, but it spreads it throughout the community, like they did at the White House.
I have to admit that having spent the last 6 months mostly inside, or certainly being extremely careful when I wasn't, wearing a mask everywhere outside, keeping my distance from people, I resent the people who are not being careful, because they're the ones who are prolonging this and keeping the rest of us from going back to normal life.
And I, you know, don't like to be too pessimistic, but I'm even if Biden is elected and he tries to promote, you know, better things, and we constantly hear from good health experts all the time, there's so many people that are resistant at this point. I'm not hopeful.
Yeah. Just like I'm not hopeful about the disappearance of all the right-wing crazies who are Trump supporters. They're not going away, and they're bringing their guns with them.
Read one optimistic article. Of course, they're not going away, but it says that without their leader constantly reinforcing this, it does subside a bit.
Well, their leader is going to be on his own television network, just inspiring them even more to get violent and revolutionary.
If he survives. I mean, I'm reading about the long-term consequences of having had COVID.
Yeah, sure.
Heart disease, et cetera. I mean, Amy Coney Barrett has it, and she may turn out to be a bad investment. I hate to sound so negative.
I know. Well, let's talk about other politicians. Carlos Menchaca, young, gay, Latino man, member of the city council of New York City, has jumped into the mayor's race. Very dynamic, very accomplished, very progressive. That's a good thing.
Young guy. Yep. There are about 8 candidates for mayor at this point.
I think there are 16.
Well, we only heard from about 8 of them last night.
7.
Jim Owl's Liberal Democratic Club.
Well, that's because we heard from the most progressive ones, although there were 1 or 2 who weren't my definition of progressive. But Carlos was terrific, and so were several others. And the other out LGBTQ candidate, Lori Sutton, was not included in the debate last night because she is not regarded as progressive enough.
Well, the other candidates were questioned about this. She took a stand that said, not only do you always have to have a permit when you have a demonstration, but every individual who participates in a demonstration in New York must now register a registry, which is insane. I wrote back to them and said, if that's your position, no progressive group would ever think of endorsing you.
And they're still defending it as appropriate in these days of, horror in the streets, which is nonsense.
By the way, what happened with Ann Northrup, who was arrested for being at a press conference in April?
Still waiting to hear. The courts were closed, and I haven't heard a word from anybody about them pursuing the summons I was given. So
thank you for your
maybe I'm a someone who has fled my ticket.
Maybe a van is going to pull up and
any day now. One can only hope.
All right.
Also, another progressive candidate for mayor, Scott Stringer, is now under a little cloud because his past as an associate of Roy Cohn in his young days has been dug up.
He was part of a group through his mother, his late mother, who died of COVID, by the way, and he blamed that on Trump, which was nice. But when he was young, they were trying to supplant some reformers. The Cone was, and organizing people in Manhattan. It was not successful to supplant them in the leadership of the Democratic Party. But Scott has been, I will say, a pretty solid progressive for
terrific.
All.
He's been terrific, yes. And there are 574 out LGBTQ candidates around the country, which is a 33% rise from 2 years ago. We're coming out in droves to run for office, and those are just the ones that we know about and have been publicly identified.
And if you would like to read about who in your area might be out, who's running, go to victoryfund.org. There was a slight decrease in trans candidates, but a big increase in non-binary or gender non-conforming candidates. The Human Rights Campaign, by the way, also came out with their congressional scorecard on how your representatives voted on these issues. So if you're interested in how your person voted, your representative voted, go to hrc.org.
Didn't everybody either get a 0 or 100%?
Pretty much. I mean, the Republicans were so low and below 10%, basically, and most of the Democrats were above 90, and many 100.
To something else? Adafe Okporo, who was on this show a few weeks ago, great advocate for immigrants, an out gay Nigerian immigrant himself, runs a shelter in Harlem in Manhattan here in New York. terrific guy, and a very popular guest on our show. We heard from so many viewers about how much they like him. Well, he is now one of the five first winners of a new thing called the David Prize. So he and the rest of them each get $200,000 for their work. That's a huge endorsement of his work. Also, Domingo Morales was another winner for his project to make compost power. He was a mentee of David Buckle, the out gay lawyer from Lambda, who quit Lambda and devoted his life to composting and environmentalism, and in a very sad and tragic moment, immolated himself in Prospect Park a few years ago as a protest in favor of environmentalism. Domingo is carrying on his work and was also one of the first five winners of this David Prize. So congratulations to both Adafe and Domingo.
And we appreciate the people. We made one little announcement here on the show that if you want to support Gay USA and donate, you can go to gayusatv.org. And you did. So we appreciate that. And you can still do that.
The website is available 24/7 for anybody who wants to help support our work.
But fill out the census first if you haven't.
Yeah, there's a time limit on that.
We better go. And in New York, a U.S. District Court Judge, May D'Agostino, put a hold on a lower court decision stopping New Hope Family Services of Syracuse, an Alliance Defending Freedom case. The service said that they would refer people for adoption to other agencies. New York bans discrimination, and you can't operate in this field if you discriminate. And Catholic Charities in Buffalo just quit rather than comply with the law. But now this group is suing for the right to discriminate.
I'm surprised that Amy Coney Barrett has not been asked about the Philadelphia case that is coming up to the Supreme Court, because that certainly is about religious freedom, and that should be put on the docket quite openly.
And I couldn't possibly comment.
Yeah, exactly. No, of course you couldn't, but those issues could be elucidated productively, I think, in the hearings. All right, moving to sports. An update first from San Diego. We showed you the very moving speech last week by soccer coach Landon Donovan in support of his gay player who had been slurred on the field by an opposing player called Botty Boy. And the referee said, well, I don't know what that means, so I can't punish him. Well, that player who made that slur has been suspended for 6 games, which is a pretty severe punishment. Although the San Diego team, of course, by forfeiting the game in support of their player, took themselves out of the playoffs. But I was glad to see that the offending player got suspended.
And then the NFL has put out a 30-second PSA. It can urging players to come out because there are now no out players. Some former players who are out are in it, as well as some current players who are saying, come on, come out. So let's show people this 30-second PSA.
Today, on National Coming Out Day,
we come together with one clear message.
To all current players who are thinking of coming out.
When you are ready, so are we.
I support you.
I got you.
We got you.
We got you.
The highs, the lows. We're teammates, we're brothers.
We support you.
It takes all of us.
All of us.
It takes all of us.
And you deserve to be all of you.
Times, they are changing.
Well, I appreciate the positive messages from the NFL doing that and from Landon Donovan's speech and actions. But the fact is that it's still very tough out there, and people are still promoting these macho atmospheres that are discriminatory.
Still, look, even in show business, which is supposed to be so liberal, there are very few out LGBT performers.
Yes.
There are more and more, but, it's still a problem. All right.
Here at Gay USA, we believe in being out.
Yes.
All right. International news.
Well, in Russia, the Pussy Riot members who hung those rainbow flags from government buildings, they've been around, we got some B-roll of this, have been
They were celebrating Putin's birthday.
have been arrested and roughed up by the police. The video is of Maria Aulio Cantena, who was grabbed at the entrance to something called TV Rain just before her scheduled interview. So they're tracking these people.
They've detained about seven members and affiliates of Pussy Riot. Most have been released. Some are being held and prosecuted.
And then Nikolai Alexeyev, the big gay activist in Russia, once a very brave gay activist, he's also listed as one of the 31 LGBT icons this week on that website, I think out of Philadelphia. Well, he's now on social media promoting Donald Trump. And he says, when you try to tell him that Trump is an anti-LGBT demagogue, he says, there are other issues to consider.
Well, here are the issues that Pussy Riot is promoting by hanging those rainbow flags and putting themselves at physical risk. They want same-sex partnerships legalized. They want the brutality in Chechnya investigated and stopped. They want the harassing of ally organizations stopped. They want a non-discrimination law. And they want the harassing of LGBT families to stop.
In the United Kingdom,
sorry, not going to happen in Poland, where the government is proposing a new regional family rights treaty to supplant European Union guarantees of non-discrimination.
Well, the new Minister for Education and Science in Poland thinks LGBT people aren't equal to normal people. And that's true. We're better because we have to put up with bigotry from people like you. Anyway,
and sadly, World Rugby is proposing to ban trans women from World Rugby, yes, while accepting trans men on the grounds that trans women have too much advantage physically from having gone through male puberty, and it's too dangerous for the other women to have to compete against trans women. This is all utter nonsense, but that's the stereotype they're buying into.
Back to Poland, sort of, in the United Kingdom, the left-wing Guardian newspaper, my favorite there, they use the Polish cartoonist Andrzej Kraus for cartoons about Europe issues. And activist Peter Tatchell exposed him as the court cartoonist for the anti-LGBT Polish right wing back home. He's been doing cartoons comparing same-sex marriage with bestiality and racist cartoons as well. So the Guardian agreed to let him go.
Okay. AIDS news?
The Vatican, four of the Swiss guards tested positive for COVID. They live in very close quarters and are known for mixing it up. Kind of a threat to the
one
Pope.
One way or another.
Kind of a threat to the Pope, who often goes maskless. And how would they elect a Pope? How would they have a conclave for the Pope in the COVID era? They have to do it in the Sistine Chapel.
There aren't that many cardinals who vote. I'm sure they could spread them out. They'd probably do it in St. Peter's rather than
but
in
they'd
the
have chapel. To travel on planes. We're not allowed to go to a lot of these countries.
Well, maybe they do it on Zoom.
Maybe they'll just bring back Pope Ratzinger. All right, AIDS news. The American Heart Association says half of all LGBTQ patients have higher risk for heart disease. They cite that we use tobacco and alcohol more, but also the stress of discrimination. And the 24th U.S. Conference on HIV/AIDS gets underway online on October 19th at noon and runs till the 21st. Go to NMAC.org. That's National Minority AIDS Coalition, I think. NMAC.org for more information. We'll put that in our email. Sign up for our email list.
All right. Entertainment news. Well, I am eagerly anticipating the opening this week of Newfest, the New York LGBTQ Film Festival, because you don't have to go to the theater. You can watch it all online. Some events are free. Some you have to buy tickets for. But they're showing, for instance, the movie Ahead of the Curve about the founding of Curve magazine. They've got a lot of sexy boy pictures. They've got a lot of free panels. Go to newfest.org to take a look. They're premiering some big Hollywood-type movies. Ammonite, I think, is an opening night movie. Newfest.org. All these film festivals, it's one of the good things about the situation we're all in, because instead of everything being confined to small areas, the world is now open to you in these kinds of operations. The AFI Film Fest 2020 is also opening, and they're showing No Ordinary Man, a documentary about Billy Tipton, the cross-dressing, I guess sometimes referred to now as trans, jazz musician who I remember when that story came out in the New York Times some years ago, and it was, whoa, Billy Tipton was really a woman. Well, trans man, cross-dressing woman, I don't know, but No Ordinary Man is the film available there. And also something called Sisters with Transistors, about lesbians who are electronic music pioneers. There's all sorts of stuff in these film festivals, and it's really worth your time to take a look at what's available.
And I'm only halfway through a film called Daedalus, which is opening soon. And it is one of the strangest things I've ever seen on film.
Is it James Joyce related or?
No. It's really about, it seems to, I don't know exactly what it's about because it keeps changing focus, but it seems to be a lot about sex work.
Well, you know, one of the films that's been out in these film festivals and around is a movie called Cured, about changing the American Psychiatric Association definition of homosexuality and destigmatizing it. Well, the FX TV network is now going to make a series about this called 81 Words. Stephen Canals, who is one of the creators of Pose, is making this series, and it's going to go through the whole thing about the changing of the definition, but in a TV series format.
There was a play about this called 81 Words.
And that's what they're turning into the TV series, yeah. Right.
Okay, Broadway is bad news, shut down at least through May, and God knows when. Some shows are opening in the West End in London, small casts, lots of empty seats. You don't have to worry about theater reviews for me for a long time. All right, I watched The Boys and the Band on Netflix. You and I went to see the play together. We didn't laugh much and weren't very high on that. This was worse. It was direct.
Same cast, right?
Same cast, and I have loved these guys in so many other roles, so much other work. And Joe Mantello directed it, but, you know, he's a wonderful theater director, but his focus in the film was not there. I mean, in the end, and I know some of you liked it, but there wasn't a single, I know the original movie and you saw the original play, but there wasn't a single line reading in the movie that was better than the 1970 film. I mean, maybe they were just trying to be different, but they were missing the jokes. It was just, I just thought it was awful. And the real biggest problem is Jim Parsons as Michael, the central role, because Michael comes on and, you know, originally in the play, it's kind of a bubbly character. You're going to have a fun party and it's kind of delightful. And then you can enjoy that for a little while. But Jim Parsons is so sour from the very beginning that there's no arc to the story. So when he breaks down and becomes this horrible racist thing, and by the way, they're also afraid of putting all this racism in the mouth of Jim Parsons. So they kind of bury the lines a lot in that regard. So, you know, I have a great affection for Mark Crowley, even though, you know, we didn't like the revival. I'm glad he won the Tony just because he deserved it for what happened in the past.
I'm a big fan of being realistic about people's hiding or self-loathing or fear or all of that. But I get really, really tired of these works of art that emphasize this. I don't like The Well of Loneliness. I don't like The Children's Hour. As you know, I once had a dream where I was screaming at Lillian Hellman for giving me a negative image.
She deserved it.
Yeah, she did. Unfortunately, she was not alive to hear it. But
then she would have sued you.
But I have the same objection to boys in the band. It's just too self-loathing.
There are so many stories from that era. 81 words. There are so many stories from that era that need to be told. And they don't, you know, they're going to show trouble. It doesn't have to be all sweetness and light and triumph.
No.
But there was struggle. But all right, there were men like this who had parties and things. I was never invited.
Me either. But you can show complexity. Complexity is fascinating. Angels in America is a complex story that angles on this. Did you watch the Broadway World 1 hour version of X?
It was awful.
I agree completely.
I couldn't, you know, it was the worst parts of Angels in America. All that highfalutin,
intolerable, intolerable.
And then at the end, they had a nice little coda of people with COVID from around the country, but it was unwatchable.
Well, the only thing I enjoyed watching was Patti LuPone yelling. That I could listen to for hours.
Patti LuPone doing what?
Yelling.
Well, there was Patti LuPone yelling, but then, you know, she's also rehabilitating Randy Rainbow. She did a Covita with him, and she was hilarious.
Yes.
We love her.
Yeah, I'm a. We do love her, and I could watch her for hours. But that excerpts of Angels, see the whole thing. Go to HBO and at least watch the TV version. Not certainly better than this.
And speaking of long plays, the Tony nominations are being announced at noon on October 15th. Some of you will have already seen what they are. There's not much to choose from because not much got to open. So this is good news for The Inheritance, which is much too long, but probably will win all the awards. And some of those performances do deserve honor.
Also much too long these days, and I've thought this for a long time, is Saturday Night Live, which has very little to recommend it week after week after week. Even the opening skits fall flat. But this week, at least Pete Davidson did a little bit on J.K. Rowling and her transphobia. I didn't find it particularly.
Well, he said he got all those tattoos that he has because of Harry Potter books. I don't know what that means. But then he said that was before Rowling went all Mel Gibson on us. He said he longs for the times when the worst Rowling had contributed were those Fantastic Beast movies.
But it didn't make up for the guest host Bill Burr, a quote comedian, unquote, who did a whole bit about June is too long as a Pride Month for people who were never enslaved. And then went on to talk about how black people should get July.
I didn't watch that part.
Horrible. Horrible.
We're coming down to our last few seconds here. What do we got here? Come on.
I think we're done, aren't we?
Well, we have 13 seconds. Fill out the census, vote, and we will see you next week.
Thanks, everybody. See you then.